Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, a weekly look at issues surrounding Minnesota military service members, families, and employers. I'm Tom Lyons. Today, Captain David Markgraf from the Minnesota National Guard will tell us about his experience on this year's Deployed Soldier Deer Hunt. Minnesota's Adjutant General remembers World War II veterans. We take a look at how you can support our troops and their families during the holidays, and we discover Minnesota's historic role at Pearl Harbor. All this and more on today's Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Check our podcasts of today's show and all our shows on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Let's get started. This week, Captain David Markgraf joins us. He's a soldier in the Minnesota National Guard and in his free time, a hunter who went on this year's Deployed Service Member Deer Hunt at Camp Ripley. Captain Markgraf, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it.
Captain, I understand you're a member of the 34th Infantry Red Bull Division, and I believe you were on the recent deployment when the troops came home this year?
Yes, I was. We got back coming up on a year ago now, last February, I got back.
It's been a year already. And for some of those soldiers that are in the Minnesota National Guard and have been deployed, there's a hunt that's available to you at Camp Ripley. Can you tell us who's eligible to participate in that and how that works?
Absolutely. Any returning veteran, I think within 2 years of coming back from the deployment, is eligible to apply for that hunt and get selected to hunt there and also at the Arden Hills training site down here in the Twin Cities as well.
So do you have to apply or get a permit through the Guard, or who controls that?
Yes, you can apply through the Camp Ripley commander's office up in up at Camp Ripley.
Now, have you been a longtime hunter?
A few years, mostly small game and birds. This is first couple times going out deer hunting, though.
So is Camp, how's Camp Ripley compared to other possible places to go?
It's great up there. It's huge. I mean, there's 53,000 acres up there of prime wilderness. Compared to other places I've hunted around home, it's just pristine wilderness out there, and there's plenty of room for deer to run around and grow, and it's somewhat protected from public hunts.
I suppose it's a bit familiar to you because you do your training up there.
Absolutely. I've been training up there quite a bit and kind of know the lay of the land a little bit.
So how many hunters participate in this deployed troop hunter deer hunt?
I think there was around 200, both deployed soldiers, recently returned soldiers, and also the disabled hunters were up there same time as we were this year.
So was this a bow hunt or was it the rifles?
Yes, it was a bow hunt, archery.
Okay, and how'd you do?
I did not get a deer, unfortunately, but there's several guys that did get very nice deer out of there this time.
From what I understand from the commander up there, the population, the deer population within Camp Ripley is, I don't know how he knows it, but he knows there's quite a few of them up there. There's some pretty good trophies?
There were. We actually had, I think the hunter last year that shot the 31-point buck came up there, and he was a guide for the disabled hunt this year. And Lieutenant Colonel St. Sava refers to Camp Ripley as his 53,000 backyard, so pretty sure he's probably out there counting each deer.
He's got the nicest backyard in Minnesota, doesn't
he? Absolutely, he does.
We're speaking with Captain David Markgraf on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour here on Cape Talk, 100.3 FM. Captain, how many different hunts do they have up there, do you know?
They had the deployed and disabled veteran hunt early October, and then they had two separate weekends of the public hunt, and they also have a youth hunt, archery, all archery up there.
It's all of those hunts are archery?
The disabled hunt, they can use shotguns, firearms, but all the rest is archery. Yep.
I'm told that you had an interesting first morning out.
I did. Sitting up in my stand about 9:30 or so. It's real nice morning, sunny, crisp morning. And in my stand, I was up in an oak tree, and there was a one of the trunks of the oak tree was right over my left shoulder. And right at the kind of, I was actually getting ready to get down from my stand to walk around and stretch my legs a little bit, and I heard a little sound off to my left, and sure enough, three bucks popped up and took off running about 30 yards away, so I didn't get a chance to get a draw on them or anything. Turns out a little bit later, my hunting partner, Staff Sergeant Darren Stowe, was about 150 yards away from my stand, and he saw him actually swim across the river and come up right behind me, and they came up over my left shoulder between the oak tree and the river, so I didn't get a chance to see him on time.
Too bad you didn't have some communication equipment so he could warn you they were coming.
Well, we'd have to use some sort of smoke signals because the electronic means is not really ethical.
No, that wouldn't be allowed, would it? Did you see any of the other soldiers from the 34th Infantry up there?
I did. I saw a handful that were deployed with us. So
I'll bet they were all glad to be back and glad to be out in the woods hunting.
Absolutely. Another thing Lieutenant Colonel St. Sauver in his opening remarks up there said is that all conversations that soldiers have while deployed always revolve around hunting and fishing and their last hunt, and they're looking forward to their next hunt, and it's a great opportunity to be able to go up there and participate in that.
So one of the things you were looking forward to coming back from the war zone is to be able to get up north in the quiet and do a little archery hunting.
Absolutely.
For deer.
Peace and quiet of the woods.
Can you tell us when you were in Iraq, what was your unit assigned to? What did you do there?
I was the commander of headquarters support company of the Special Troops Battalion. It was a support battalion for the 34th ID headquarters. And our company's mission was to provide all the logistical personnel, operational support for the 34th ID at Cobb, Basra, Iraq. Cobb is a contingency operating base.
Was that deployment the one that was referred to as the longest?
No. We were deployed for 12 months total. The 1st Brigade of the 34th ID was deployed for the 22 months back in 2006 and 7.
How much training did you have to do before you actually went?
We went to Fort Lewis, Washington for about 2 months prior to deploying overseas.
And they tell me that now we're doing a lot of that training at Camp Ripley so that you can stay closer to home.
They are. I think the 1st Brigade had 6 months on at Camp Shelby, and due to our at-home training or training at Camp Ripley, that got knocked down from 6 months to about the 2 months that we spent.
And while you were deployed, did you or any of your units, I'm sure you were briefed on the Yellow Ribbon programs and the support programs for your troops. Did they tell you about those things before you left?
Absolutely.
And did some of your men take advantage of those? Did they have problems at home that were helped with some of those, your family readiness officer and so forth?
Yes, that's a great program, and we had several soldiers, all of our soldiers go through the briefings and the events coming back in our 30 and 60 and 90 day reintegration events, and there's just so much information there that are available, and people can get hooked up through the county veteran service officer, and I can't even think of all the different agencies that are there that are ready to and willing to help soldiers coming back.
Sure, and we talk about those on the show. How does that make you and your troops feel about all the services available to help your families?
It's makes us feel that we are remembered and supported back here at home, and our company is hosting a Christmas party for our December drill, and we invited the Invergrove Heights Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Committee to our Christmas party just to show them our appreciation of what they've done for us in Invergrove Heights. That's where our unit is based.
Well, Captain, I hope in next year's hunt you get a nice trophy buck.
Me too, thanks.
And thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it.
That was Captain David Markgraf, a soldier in the Minnesota National Guard and a hunter who went on this year's Deployed Soldier Deer Hunt at Camp Ripley. We have links to more information on the hunt on MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Want to know what's on the mind of Minnesota's Adjutant General? Generally Speaking is next on KTALK 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. It's time for, Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
As we look ahead to this week, I urge my fellow Minnesotans to take a moment and remember the sacrifice of the veterans of World War II. Tuesday marks the 69th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor, and our nation is in debt to all who have served during this defining time of American history. More than 2,000 men died in a matter of minutes on that Sunday morning. Many more died that same day as Japanese forces assaulted the Philippines and Guam, Wake Island, Midway, Thailand, Singapore, and Hong Kong. On that day of infamy, Pearl Harbor propelled each of us into a titanic contest for mankind's future. It galvanized the American spirit as it never had before in a single-minded resolve that could produce only one thing, victory. The values we hold dear as a nation, equality of opportunity, freedom of religion, speech and assembly, free and vigorous elections, are now revered by many nations. Our greatest victory in World War II took place not on the field of battle, but in nations we once counted as foes. The ideals of democracy and liberty have triumphed in a world once threatened with conquest by tyranny and despotism. Recently, I attended the funeral of 92-year-old Don Singelstad in Park Rapids, Minnesota. Don, then a 27-year-old technical sergeant, serving with the 34th Division of Minnesota National Guard, was credited with serving with great distinction, ultimately earning Italy's equivalent of the Medal of Honor for his contributions for freedom. During a trip to Italy just last year, he showed me in person where he stood as he led his unit in an assault on the German Gothic Line, a series of fortifications stretching coast to coast. He epitomizes the spirit of those who stirred to serve our state and nation after December 7, 1941. World War II is over. It is history. We prevailed. We crushed the oppressor. And when it was accomplished, we helped our enemies give birth to democracies. We made our enemies our friends. On behalf of the men and women of the Minnesota National Guard, I assure you that we are inspired by the veterans of World War II today. We had the same lofty goal of defeating those that would destroy our way of life, but now we call it terrorism, and transforming our foes into friends in the pursuit of democracy. So, on this 69th anniversary of Pearl Harbor, thanks to all World War II veterans for your service to our nation.
Thank you, General Nash. You can link to the Adjutant General's blog, Facebook, and Twitter feed through MinnesotaNationalGuard.org/generallyspeaking. Each week, we showcase Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, a comprehensive program that connects service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. This week, Captain Jackie Stanger joins us. She is the State Family Programs Director with Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Captain Stanger, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you.
Captain, can you tell us what you do with the Yellow Ribbon programs and what the State Family Programs Office is about?
Well, my office is a branch of the Deployment Cycle Support. We support the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon community campaign and also those Minnesota service members and their families who are geographically dispersed. In Minnesota, we have no active duty bases, so we take it upon ourselves to try to implement programs that are available to active duty soldiers, but to our guard family soldiers, our airmen, all branches of the service.
Captain, I understand you were deployed to Afghanistan in 2007 for a year?
That is correct.
And you are married and have a couple of children?
I am, yes. I am a dual military family, so my husband also serves in the military.
I would think that the fact that you were deployed for a year and had to leave your family, and now when you come back and you're part of the State Family Programs Office, it gives you a unique perspective on your position there.
It really does. And what I try to do when people ask me questions is I look at different situations from the various different perspectives that I carry within myself. So I look at things as a deployed soldier, you know, what the situation is, how would it make a deployed soldier feel? As the spouse, how would it make the spouse back home feel? How about the mom, you know? So even in my position now, I bring to the table a various different perspectives to look at one single situation.
Captain, can you tell us what it's like to be deployed during the holidays and away from your family?
It's very difficult. In my case, I have two daughters. So having mom gone is a lot different than having dad gone. But the things that you miss, you know, are the things that really, really hit home, and the holidays are one of them. So when I was overseas, I tried to make that holiday seem like just another day for me to help me through it. But I also knew that I had to help my daughters through holidays at home, you know. So to make a big deal out of it when you're not even there is difficult because you're trying to remove yourself from it.
And, Captain, how did it make you feel on your deployment to know that there were programs in place to help support your husband and your family while you were gone?
It's very relieving. You know, the soldiers and service members have been pulled, and the biggest concern they have about deployment when they go is that their families are being taken care of. And if you can take care of a soldier's family, it eases some of the daily burden that they have over in the combat zone, which makes them able to focus more on their mission.
We're speaking with Captain Jackie Stinger, State Family Programs Director with Beyond the Yellow Ribbon on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on KTOC 100.3 FM. Captain, I understand that the State Family Program manages many programs about family assistance centers and so forth. Can you tell us about these programs?
Yes. Throughout the state, we have 13 family assistance centers to include Army and Air Force. As I said before, we're a purple organization, so we support all branches of the military. And we have the Military Family Care Initiative. We have youth programs that when the soldiers come back, one example of youth programs, I'll restate that, is when the soldiers come back, they're required to go through unit reintegration program, so a 30, 60, 90-day reintegration. And it's mandatory for them. But what we like to do is we bring in programming for those youth. So they're not just coming to these events with their loved one and their family to just be put into a daycare. They're actually getting curriculum to help them cope with their loved ones coming back or prior to deployment. We also have partnerships with different organizations that help us do military youth camps and whatnot.
Captain, can we walk through maybe in a typical emergency? I understand if you're deployed that you've been briefed that if your family needs some help, they go first to the family readiness officer. Is that correct?
The family assistance centers offer a one-stop shop. For example, a service member's spouse, it's in the dead of winter and their furnace goes out and they don't have the money to purchase a new furnace or they just need it repaired, they can call the family assistance center, and that family assistance center can get them in touch with a business out there who has offered to give support to military service members and their families to repair that furnace. If it's beyond repair, there are grants available that the Family Assistance Center can help them sign up for that could replace that furnace. And there's also that Family Assistance Center could also put them in touch with the community's Yellow Ribbon Network, where they also have resources. So not just things like the furnace, but if there's financial issues, they can help them set them up with budget counseling or things of that nature. So it really is a one-stop shop.
Now, Captain, the governor and the adjutant general have proclaimed many cities and counties as yellow ribbon communities. Can you briefly tell us what that's about?
Basically, a yellow ribbon community is a community supporting the soldiers and service members within that community. The Planet Cycle Support will put on these different events, but when things happen, we're not always there. It's things you normally don't happen during an event. It's the times when the soldier is within their community that usually things happen. So the Yellow Ribbon, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Network and those communities have worked together to support those soldiers right within their communities. As I said, there's no active duty bases in Minnesota, so we don't have that extra support that normal active duty soldiers have. For instance, when my daughter when I was overseas, my oldest daughter was in middle school. And when she would go to school, she could not talk to her friends about what it was like to be a military child, and they would understand. Where on an active duty base or post, you know, the children and the teachers understand what that child is going through. Friends are able to help each other through those tough times. What the Yellow Ribbon community does, it gets, you know, the educators, the law enforcement, the faith organizations, to name a couple, together to help support those children and those families where they're not receiving the support that an active duty.
Captain, what kind of military support do you see from the Yellow Ribbon communities?
There's different programs for the schools. There's businesses that come together and say, you know, I'd like to help all soldiers who have, you know, for example, that the furnace issue. You know, I'm a business that specializes in furnace and air conditioning repair. You know, I'd like to support any soldier that's having issues. I mean, there's many different ways that these communities help the family.
Sometimes it's as simple as babysitting, mowing the lawn, or shoveling snow.
Yes.
Captain, we're just about out of time. If our listeners want to support military families, but maybe don't have time to donate, can they donate money? How do they go about finding out how they can help?
You know, they can. They can send donations to the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. They can also go to our webpage, www.beyondtheyellowribbon.org, and click on Make a Difference for different ideas on how to support those families.
Captain, we're about out of time, but I appreciate you joining us today.
I thank you for your time to let me talk about what I love to do.
Yes, ma'am. That was Captain Jackie Stenger, the State Family Programs Director for the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. We've linked to more information on how you can support our troops and their families during the holidays on MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. For more information on bringing service members all the way home, visit BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase, where someone just like you and I went out of their way to make a difference in the life of a service member or military family. As Captain Jackie Stenger mentioned, this is the time of year when the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon phone rings off the hook. There's the story about a beekeeper that called. He had several pints of honey that he wanted to share with Minnesota service members overseas. Then there's the author who had just self-published a children's book and wanted to give a copy to each military child whose parent would be deployed on this holiday season. There's the company who sent their deployed employee through holiday treats to share with the entire unit. The musician who had just finished a new inspirational album and wanted to give copies to military families, and a Girl Scout troop who planned to shovel their leader's driveway because her husband would be deployed through the winter. The stories just keep on coming. Thanks to so many of you for showcasing how Minnesotans strive to go beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon is a comprehensive program that creates awareness, connecting service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. It connects organizations, agencies, and companies to provide resources and support to service members and their families, and it's united to bring the service members all the way home. To learn how you can join or start a Yellow Ribbon network in your community, and like so many Minnesotans, make a difference in the life of a service member or military family, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. After the break, we visit the Commissioner's Corner, next on KTOC 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Office of the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here to join us today is Deputy Commissioner Reggie Worlds.
The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is once again proud to commemorate the 69th anniversary of Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day. This Tuesday, December 7th, we will remember all those who perished that tragic day in 1941, as well as those who served. More than 3,000 brave military service members and civilians were killed or wounded when Japan launched an attack against the United States Naval Fleet stationed at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. we now know this officially brought the United States into World War II. President Roosevelt later addressed Congress and stated that the attack on December 7, 1941 was a date which will live in infamy. In the following months, as the war ensued, the slogan, "Remember Pearl Harbor," became publicized throughout our nation's media outlets. This is a special day of remembrance for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. It is a day we hold near and dear to our hearts as we see our state's World War II veterans diminish with each passing year. At last count, Minnesota was home to more than 39,000 World War II veterans. Over 326,000 Minnesotans served in the military during World War II, and over 6,000 gave their lives. This year, I invite our listeners to attend MDVA's Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day ceremony at 10 a.m. The Fort Snelling National Cemetery Memorial Rifle Squad and the Pearl Harbor Survivors Association, in partnership with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, will host the event on the fifth floor of the Veterans Service Building in St. Paul. This year's program will include comments from Tom Mullen and guest speaker Richard Thiel, Pearl Harbor survivor, a rifle salute, and echo taps. For more information on how or where to join in and other observances of this distinctive day, I encourage you to seek out one of your local veterans support or advocacy groups. Lastly, I would like to simply reiterate the fact that as we remember Pearl Harbor and commemorate and honor World War II veterans, it is never too late to seek veterans benefits that have been earned. Stop in and visit with your county veterans service officer or visit us on the web at minnesotaveteran.org.
Thank you, Mr. Worlds. You can find out more about Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs programs at minnesotaveteran.org or 1-888-LINK-VET.
Honolulu, Japanese bombs killed at least five persons and injured many others, three seriously, in a surprise morning aerial attack today on Honolulu. The sky was filled with puffs of smoke from exploding shells fired by American Army and Navy anti-aircraft units. Whether surface vessels of the United States fleet were in action against the enemy could not be learned at once. But columns of water rising from the sea as shells hit the water indicated a naval action.
That was a clip from 1941, courtesy of CBS News. 69 years ago this week, Japanese forces mounted a devastating attack on Pearl Harbor, drawing the United States into World War II. Many may not know the historic role Minnesotans played during that day. Join us to talk about this is former state command historian for the Minnesota National Guard, Major Blaine Iffert. Major Iffert, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Major, can you tell us what ties Minnesota military personnel had to that infamous day in the Pacific?
Sure, Tom. On the morning of December 7th, 1941, the destroyer USS Ward was patrolling the area to the entrance of Pearl Harbor, which the United States Navy did for quite a bit of time leading up to Pearl Harbor. But what's interesting about the Ward is that that ship was mostly manned by naval reservists from the St. Paul Naval Reserve Unit. So this ship patrolling the entrance of Pearl Harbor had an opportunity to see an attack coming before the rest of the main Japanese attack.
And Major, that was that that terrible morning when most of the Pacific Fleet was at harbor.
Most of the fleet was there, except fortunately for the aircraft carriers. That's right. What's important, though, with the Minnesota crew and the Ward is they did identify a Japanese sub trying to get into the harbor before the actual attack. They notified command and then opened fire on this Japanese submarine, which they thought was trying to enter the harbor, that it was an enemy sub. They ended up sinking the submarine and were thus then the first Americans to shoot on the enemy in all of World War II.
Now, Major, was this actually a couple hours before the prime attack?
As a matter of fact, it was. And they get credit, and they knew that they were after it for a while. They knew that they were the first ship to fire on the Japanese.
And when they finally did start to attack, how long did the attack take at Pearl Harbor?
2 hours.
It took about 2 hours, and actually, you can watch this attack and parts of the engagement with the USS Ward. If you remember that movie Tora Tora Tora, they display the Ward at the beginning of the movie, and you can see what their interpretation was of that attack also.
Major, you said this the Minnesota personnel on the ward were a part of the Minnesota Naval Reserve?
Yes, sir. They're part of the reserve. They drilled out of the St. Paul naval office there, and then were sent off to Hawaii.
So they were assigned to Pearl Harbor, essentially. So all of the personnel on that ship were Minnesota personnel?
I don't believe 100%. My understanding, and through looking through the rosters, it looks like just the majority were.
Do we have any evidence that shows that the ward fired the first shot and actually sank the sub?
We do. As a matter of fact, there was a lot of doubt that the ward actually did fire the first shot and sink it. There was a lot of confusion at the time. But in 2002, the University of Hawaii conducted a study. They actually found the submarine. It had the holes in it where the crew of the ward said they hit it, and it was in the exact spot where they said they had hit it. So everything was confirmed, and there's no doubt about it now that those Minnesotans on the ward were the first to fire and were the first to engage with the enemy.
Now, is that sub still on the bottom of the ocean, or did they bring it up?
You know, I read a lot about that submarine, and I saw pictures of it, and I don't know if it's up, but I saw pictures, and it had the holes. And remember, it was a mini sub, and I know there were attempts to bring it up, so it wasn't a full-length submarine, but a small spy-type submarine. And you can, if you go online, you can see it. That perfect pictures with the holes in it where they said that they were on the conning tower. And it's a fantastic find, confirming what our natives here in St. Paul took care of those the attackers there at Pearl Harbor.
We're speaking with Major Blaine Iffert, the former state command historian for the Minnesota National Guard, here on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on KTOC 100.3 FM. Major, what happened to the ward after Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, well, the ward was refit as a transportation and a transportation boat and mainly escort, and it would ship men throughout the entire South Pacific theater, and a lot of it was in the island hopping campaign, transporting troops, providing escort. So it was refitted as a new type of ship.
So a lot of our Minnesotans stayed on the ward and served throughout the Pacific campaign.
Yes, sir, they did.
I understand that the ward had a strange fate later in the war.
It did. It's one of those situations that if you told someone, they probably wouldn't believe it. They'd just say, "Oh, that's a neat story." And what happened was, in October and November of 1944, the ward was conducting a lot of escort and transportation missions in the South Pacific. And moving into December, they were in the Leyte Gulf area. Now, when they were in that area there, you have to remember, this is early December 1944. There were Japanese were getting desperate, and there were a lot of kamikaze attacks. And as a matter of fact, on December 7th, 1944, 3 years to the date that they had fired and sunk the Japanese ship, they were hit by a kamikaze, and which is unfortunate. But the strange twist of fate there is the ship, while it was on fire, they called for abandoned ship. All the men had to leave, and then they had to scuttle the ship so the enemy wouldn't get any of the secret communique or any of the electronic devices. And the strange part of that is that the USS O'Brien was called on to sink the USS Ward. The captain of the USS O'Brien was Captain Outerbridge, who 3 years to the date was the captain of the Ward who sunk the Japanese submarine. So he ended up 3 years to the day later sinking his own ship.
The Major, the Ward was a, I understand it's a Wicks-class destroyer. Do you have any idea how it was equipped with guns or depth charges, those type of things?
What's interesting about the Ward when it was built in 1918, this was just right after, during World War I, they were trying to get as many out the door as possible. And the ship was actually built in 17 and a half days. So if you can imagine, how could a ship, a destroyer, they built it. And this is one of the things about the war that's amazing. And it's a record, according to the Navy, the fastest built ship ever, 17 and a half days that they built this ship.
Major, we're just about out of time. Are there any remnants of the Ward left?
As a matter of fact, there are. If you head on down to the Capitol area in St. Paul at the Vet Services Building, the 4-inch gun that fired on that Japanese submarine is right outside the front door of the Vet Services Building. That was actually put there in 1958 during Minnesota's centennial. And we welcome anyone to come down, take a look at it, have their picture taken, the little stories in front of it. And it's a great thing to come out and see.
Major Effort, thanks for joining us. We've linked to more information on the USS Ward and Pearl Harbor on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. When we return, a firsthand account of that day from one of the USS Ward's few surviving veterans. That's next on KTOC 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. This week, Richard Thill joins us. He served in the Minnesota Naval Reserve during World War II and is a survivor of the attack on Pearl Harbor. Mr. Thill, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Well, thank you for having me.
Sir, can you tell us how you came to be in the United States Navy in 1941?
Yeah, I was about 16 years old in St. Paul, and my dad worked for the power company here, and he was... somebody else working with the power company that belonged to the reserve, and I was kind of, at 16, I was pretty naive. I wanted one of those white hats like the Navy wears, and that would have been pretty smooth back in the 30s, you know, kids were pretty naive in those days. But anyway, I asked my dad if he couldn't ask his lieutenant from the reserve to get one of those caps for me, and he said, when he checked it out, he said no. But, however, if you join the Naval Reserve, you get the whole uniform. So when I was just 17, I was in the Naval Reserve down in St. Paul here, and I went on the cruise on the Great Lakes. And then, of course, when we got back off the Great Lakes cruise in August, we were told by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, now you're going to be gone for a year on a national emergency problem, and that we were going to take you on in January because we didn't want to take you before Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's and all that. So they waited until around January 21st, and we all, 84 of us, there were 84 Naval Reservists, enlisted men and two officers, and went down to San Diego, and that's where we caught the and recommissioned actually the USS Ward in around February of 1941.
So all of you were assigned to the Ward, sir?
Yes, there was the 47th Division Naval Reserve of St. Paul, and we were all some of us had to leave high school. In our junior year, there were four from Humboldt High School, and there were about five from Johnson High School that had to leave high school and go on active duty.
And the Ward was shipped off to Pearl Harbor.
Yes, we went right down to Pearl Harbor. We got down there around March 9th, and we were assigned to the 80th Destroyer Division in the Hawaiian Sea Frontier, because, you know, Hawaii was not a state yet.
Sir, what did you think when you realized the fleet was coming under attack by the Japanese?
Well, we really didn't. They were said before, it was all chaos. Nobody really knew what was happening. And we found this little submarine was in our restricted sea area. See, just outside of Pearl Harbor, there's this 2-square-mile restricted sea area, and that's where the 80th Destroyer Division would patrol that area, one of our ships at a time for a week. And, of course, anything that showed up in that area was a fair target, even peacetime. But the thing was discovered, and when they did see it, didn't know who it was. The thing is a midget submarine. I don't know if people don't know what a midget submarine is, but it's actually 80 feet long. Carries two full-size torpedoes and a crew of two, and it only has a diameter of about six feet.
You actually sank that before the attack, sir?
Pardon?
You actually sank that before the attack started?
Oh, yes, about an hour before the attack started.
And then did the ward stay outside the harbor and try to defend the entrance, or what did you do?
Well, we had no idea what we had done, really. We didn't know who it was. And nobody seemed to know. There were no markings on it, no numbers, and no names or anything. And there was a PBY plane flying above by Lieutenant Ensign Tanner, and he had just patrolled the island, and he saw it down there, and I think he thought it was a, the way he said later, he thought it might be one of our submarines in some kind of trouble, because they weren't ours, so Marines were not allowed to be submerged when they went in and out of that area. And so he dropped a smoke bomb down there to help us locate it. Well, we already knew where it was. But I think he was very surprised when we went over there and shot at it. I think he dropped a couple of depth bombs on it too. So I don't know, it didn't any harm because the thing was pretty close to the surface. And it was by the time we shot at it, it was only probably about 150, 200 feet away from us. And so it was very close.
Sir, were you assigned to the ward for the rest of the war?
No, I was on the ward for 6.5 years. Three and a half years. And then I got transferred in Buna, New Guinea. And I was supposed to go home on 30 days leave. And it took us 21 days to get home from Buna, New Guinea to the Treasure Island. And somehow my orders got changed. And I was sent on a 21-day delayed orders out to Newport, Rhode Island to go to firefighter school. And I was there for about 3 weeks. And then I was sent down to Philadelphia Navy Yard, where I was assigned to the USS Savannah, which is a light cruiser. And I was on the Savannah for a year. And the Savannah and one other cruiser and 13 destroyers was a task force that took President Roosevelt over to Malta so he could go to the Yalta Convention. At Malta, he joined Prime Minister Winston Churchill, and they flew up to Yalta to meet Stalin for the convention up there. So,
Mr. Thill, you're telling us this like it happened yesterday.
Yeah, well, sometimes it seems that way. I can't believe I'm 87 years old, and I never, ever dreamt of, never even gave it a thought of being 87 years old. And I was kind of the youngest of the group because at Hawaii, I had just had my 18th birthday on September 14, 1941. And I had just made third-class petty officer. And then, of course, about 3 weeks later, the bombing started, and I thought, boy, I'm not going to even get a good paycheck out of this yet. So
you were in the middle of it then, weren't you?
Yeah, I'll say. And it lasted a long time because we were supposed to come back in a year, you know, according to President Roosevelt, and the year was almost up, and we were kind of looking forward to that. Well, that year lasted over 5 years. So when we didn't get home, our first leave wasn't until January of 1943. And so we were gone for over 2 years. I was over 19 years old now before I got home again. And then we only got 16 days leave, and we were in Seattle, Washington, actually in the Bremerton Yard. Our ship was converted from a destroyer to an APD, which was an all-purpose destroyer. We still kept, we modernized our equipment. Our guns, original 4-inch guns, were just surface guns. We had no anti-aircraft stuff on the ship at all. Had a couple of 20 millimeters, but machine guns, but they were all from 1918, and the ammunition and stuff had been stored in Mare Island for all those years. We weren't prepared for war, I can tell you that. And, of course, they modernized all that in the Bremerton Yard back in January of 43. So, and then when we got home, half of the crew went home, of course, and at a time, and we got to 16 days, but we had to go by train from Seattle to St. Paul and Minneapolis. Used up about 4 or 5 days, well, about 4 days going and 4 days coming back. And the train in those days was stopped at every water tower. And the ironic thing of it was, we'd been in Hawaii for 2 years, and we got out of the train depot in St. Paul, and it was 20 below zero. And I had to walk from the train depot up to Wabashaw Street to catch the streetcar to go home onto the west side. And I can tell you, we were glad to get back to the war.
Mr. Thill, you've got a fantastic memory. Sounds like quite an experience for a young man in World War II. You sound like you're 87 years young to me.
Yeah, well, I feel that way sometimes.
Sir, we'd like to thank you for your service, and thank you for joining us today on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Oh, you're welcome. Incidentally, they asked that one question about whether that submarine had been raised that we sank. No, it's being held as it's never going to be raised, I don't think. They're leaving it like a cemetery thing.
Mr. Thill, thanks for joining us today on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
You're welcome.
That was Richard Thill, a World War II veteran, sharing his historic experience at Pearl Harbor 69 years ago. We have links to more information on the Remembering Pearl Harbor and on MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Because we've had such a fascinating interview today, Colonel, we're not going to have time for the mailbag, but I think we'll save that for next week. It was good to learn that what happened to that Japanese sub. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, a weekly look at the issues surrounding Minnesota military service members, families, and employers. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us here this week, Captain David Markgraf of the Minnesota National Guard, Captain Jackie Stanger from the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, Pearl Harbor veteran Richard Thill, Major Blaine Effort of the Minnesota National Guard, Deputy Commissioner Reggie Worlds of the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs, and finally, the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash. If you have questions for our mailbag or want to listen to the podcast of the show and all our shows, visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Please join us next week as we learn about a Minnesota service dog training organization's positive impact on veterans, help available for our homeless vets, and the 374th birthday of the National Guard. That's next Sunday morning at 7 right here on KTOC 100.3 FM. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of KTLK, Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.